This is Allie Lightfoot, and I'm speaking with Chuck Lemoine, who's the director of the Delta County Department of Health and Human Services, and Debbie Malgoza, who's the self-sufficiency manager in this department. Thank you so much for taking time to speak with me today.
Thank you.
It's our pleasure.
Chuck, how long have you been working in this department, and what initially made you want to work here?
Good question. I've been here over 20 years, and I think like a lot of people, when I grew up in Hotchkiss, I needed to go away and find education and a job. And when we had a family, this was a great place to raise the family, so we moved back. And then, like a lot of people, I didn't have a job, and it took me a long time looking and working at other lesser jobs before I found this opportunity.
I've been here since 2006, going on 7 years, and what brought me to this organization is I truly enjoy working with people, and it provides me a lot of opportunity to be involved with people on all different levels. And also, I like challenges, and I can honestly say that our landscape is constantly changing in terms of policy and programs, and we don't have a boring day. We don't have a typical day here either.
What are the different programs that make up the services provided here in Delta County?
We have two sides of our organization, the public health side, and our deputy director, Bonnie Kaler, leads that. That's environmental health and personal health. And then the human services side is public assistance, and we'll talk a lot about the separate areas of public assistance, child and adult protection, and options for long-term care. And we do that not just for Delta County, but for options for long-term care, we administer a three-county district that includes Gunnison and Hinsdale counties. We do that from our office in Hotchkiss, also known as the North Fork Annex.
So it's a federally funded program. How does the money get to these departments?
The lion's share of our budget is from federal resources. They're grant programs that come through the federal government to the state of Colorado, are joined by state tax funds, and then come to the county, which are joined by local property tax and sales tax revenues. And so it's roughly an 80-20% shift of federal government funding to local funding.
Have you seen things change here in the past few years, and have you seen a rise in requests for assistance?
We have. I was reviewing the numbers just a few days ago. For example, in October of 2007, we had around 900 households receiving food assistance. In December of 2012, that number was around 1,800. So requests for food assistance has doubled since 2007.
The volume of applications has certainly gone up, and you mentioned how things have changed. I think the complexity of how the programs are administered has certainly grown, too. The other big change, obviously, has been the economy, and we're all suffering under a lackluster economy. I have in front of us the original welfare books for Delta County. 100 years ago, this was our welfare program. They were large ledger books. And someone with handwriting that was beautiful would write down someone's name, their age, not their date of birth, because it wasn't a data collection, what the cause and nature of their poverty of distress was, and how much assistance was given. And it was a totally county-run program then. There were no federal or state dollars involved. And these records go back to 1896. And one of the first entries in there was a man who had immigrated to Colorado. And the under the area where comment for what was the reason for poverty or distress, someone wrote in beautiful script, whiskey and shiftlessness.
The latest numbers that I could find were from 2010, but it said that over 15% of the people living in Delta County are living in poverty. The per capita income is around $21,000. Why do you think this rate is continuing to rise, and what jobs have you seen leave the area?
I think everyone knows there have been a number of boom-bust cycles. There was a high-tech industry bust that, while it doesn't affect us immediately in Delta County, jobs that are lost in the Denver area can affect us as well. But technological jobs, energy jobs locally have been boom and bust. The real estate market has taken a bust. The general national economy has languished. And locally, I think one of the things that have affected us are the loss of manufacturing and construction jobs. In Paonia, for instance, an example of that would have been the Chaco Sandals Company. And those were good manufacturing jobs that we lost.
What are the challenges in meeting the needs of the people who need assistance here?
Well, for one thing, the number, the volume that comes through our doors, trying to keep up with that with the same resources that we've had, gathering data from people who come in. We need to verify things. And sometimes people come in, they don't have all the information that they need. Transportation is a big issue for people, especially in this county. It's so widespread. So many people live far out and aren't close to resources. There's just a lot of challenges that we face. Our computer system that we use is very complex, and, you know, we've encountered problems with that. So sometimes just trying to fight with those technological issues stand in our way. But we keep at it.
In your view, what needs to happen here for things to improve? I mean, jobs, that's pretty clear. But in what kind of jobs and does education play a part?
Well, the economy, for one thing, having the availability of jobs for people. Education is a big factor as well, and we do collaborate with other agencies and other organizations to try to help people improve their education. But really, the economy. I think when that starts to come back, then maybe we'll see a drop in our caseloads.
I think another aspect to that is our need to be competitive. It's not just an economy. We're not competing with Utah or Nebraska or Kansas. We're competing with a world economy for labor. And one of the difficulties is how competitive can you be to keep and retain those manufacturing jobs? Drawing on the Chaco Sandals issue, I believe that company was bought and relocated out to Michigan initially and then on to China. It's very hard to compete against a labor market in China.
What kinds of work do you think people, you know, we talk about meaningful jobs. What do you think people here would like to do for a living, for a job, some of the people you've met?
Boy, that's a tough question. You know, locally, people have a perspective that Delta County is an agricultural county. And yet we know that the good-paying jobs tend to follow the energy jobs, coal and gas exploration. Construction and building for laborers are also good-paying jobs. They've taken a real hit because there's not a lot of new construction going on. We're somewhat dependent on a tourism industry as well, and that is income that people, they're being more careful with spending their money on vacation, so we're not seeing as many people drop the tourism dollars in our state. I think imagination and determining what can work locally is probably our biggest challenge. What do you do when you're smart, when you're healthy, when you're willing to get up and meet the challenges each day, and you don't see who has a dollar to buy that service or good?
Do you see cuts to the Department of Health and Human Services in the future? And what would happen, do you think, to the people who still need these services?
Well, Debbie and I talk about that probably every week. One of the issues that I think is on everybody's radar is the national debt. And recently, the cliff effect, would we go off the cliff and would that have an effect? It doesn't appear to have had any effect so far. But if so much of every dollar that is spent on federal programs comes from borrowed money, sooner or later the math doesn't work. And ideally, I think if the economy grows, if we can gradually wean ourselves from dependence on these programs, it would be great. But I think there are also people who are feeling that there might be room to reduce the programs, that perhaps we have been too inclusive and that we need to pare back some of our public assistance programs.
What do you think? Can you tell me?
Well, I've watched the program grow. You know, I think the difficulty is we are dedicated here to helping people get over a short, rough patch in their life. And if we're able to do that through any of the programs that we have for public assistance, we consider that to be a success. The problem is, if that becomes a way of life, this isn't a good way of life. And my concern is, I don't think you can rely on the government or any of us in the agency to pick the course that'll help you determine what you're going to do to turn your own ship around.
How does this agency work with other organizations in the community, and how would you, you know, like to develop more collaboration, I guess?
Well, we collaborate, as I said earlier, with the school district. We work with the Delta Opportunity School. They provide adult basic education and GED. We also work with the library district to provide those types of programs as well. You know, education, I believe, is a big barrier to people achieving self-sufficiency. We also work with the Workforce Center. We try to get all of our people in the TANF program, that's the Temporary Aid to Needy Families program, hooked up with the Workforce Center, those that are job ready, so that they can get better skills at job seeking and hopefully lead them to a job that will help them to not have a need for public assistance. We also work with Tri-County Resources for people with domestic violence issues. And several other organizations. You know, we like to be involved in the community. You know, our people are part of the community, and we have a lot of great organizations here, you know, with the same goal that we do.
How are people referred to you?
Word of mouth. Often people, you know, they hear about it from someone that they know, a relative or a friend. Other agencies, we've had people referred from the school district, from the sheriff's office, workforce development. But mostly it's word of mouth, either from other agencies or people in the community.
So this department is also responsible for adult protection services, and this is to protect adults who are susceptible to mistreatment or self-neglect, and then also child welfare. Can you tell me a little bit about these programs?
You're right. We have two areas, and they are supervised in different tracks, but the programs are becoming more and more alike in terms of the rules and how casework is done in these two endeavors. Child protection is critical, and we tend to value our children in our society very, very much. And I think a lesser known fact is that all of our child protection laws really came as an offshoot of the ASPCA protection for abuse against animals.
Wow.
Yeah, it's surprising, but we do have a system where we receive referrals and we respond with an investigation. And in some cases, we provide services to help remedy the problems that are going on in the household. And in some cases, unfortunately, we are charged with taking custody of the children and finding alternate placement for them. I think adult and child protection are the most challenging aspects of what we do, particularly since some of the issues that surround both child and adult abuse or neglect also involve mental illness. And we're working very hard for physical illness. I think mental illness is a greater struggle. It's so hard to see what is wrong and to know what to do to fix it.
We were talking a little bit earlier about people's belief system, maybe their religious beliefs or just situations where you might look at it and say, well, that's just their choice to live like that. How do you determine when that becomes harmful instead of just a sort of lifestyle choice?
This is a real important message. We do not make the determination in a vacuum. The decisions on child welfare are never made by one person alone. A child welfare case normally heads to court, and so it's reviewed by a judge. There's an attorney appointed for the child, the guardian ad litem. The parents can seek counsel if they desire. Mental health is usually present. School system is usually present. The department is present through the county attorney. Law enforcement, if necessary, is also present. In these cases, it is using a village to raise a child. We have a lot of representation involved in every case that we work with.
Do you also see that in some situations, the reason why people get sort of stuck in this system or can't find work has to do with mental illness or depression?
Depression plays a large part in people being unable to motivate themselves out of a bad situation. And hopefully we are a change agent that we can say, let's start today, let's work on what you would like to do to change your life. That empowerment is really an important part that we've come to look at. And Debbie works with the program Colorado Works that I think is probably one of the most empowering programs, challenging individuals who need assistance to do their share. Our program used to be one of entitlement where, you know, as long as you had children and you were under the poverty level, you would qualify and it would continue. And if you had more children, more money would come to you. The Colorado Works program began in 1997, and it's really tailored to limit the amount of assistance for anyone to 60 months or less lifetime. So we have a short window of time to get in there, help the individual do an audit of their strengths and what they need to overcome. If it's a health issue, if it's an education issue, if it's where they're located issue, it's a chance for someone to remap their life and make a real change. And I think that's where Debbie gets to see some of the best success stories.
So Debbie is the self-sufficiency manager here. Can you talk about what you do?
I oversee the what we call the self-sufficiency programs. That is Colorado Works, which is Colorado's name for the federal program, Temporary Aid to Needy Families, also known as TANF. I also oversee child support enforcement, our Medicaid and our food assistance, child care, and fraud investigation. So that's all encompasses the self-sufficiency unit, really programs designed to help people get on their feet.
What are the misconceptions about what this department is supposed to do for people?
I think one of the big misconceptions is that we can choose who we want to help. And nothing could be further from the truth. I show you the two large leather-bound volumes, and possibly 100 years ago, it might be possible to do that. These volumes have been replaced by federal rules, and I don't think there's a month that goes by that we don't have auditors here ensuring that our system is fair and open, and that if you meet the criteria for assistance and have applied for assistance, we are duty-bound to provide that assistance if the assistance is there.
What qualifies someone for assistance in a nutshell, I guess?
Well, the major condition would be their household income, and in some cases, if they have children. And that would establish their need clearly for all the critical things, food, housing, shelter, all those basic life needs that we all have. And we don't provide actual food except through commodities distribution periodically. Our food comes from the grocery store like your food does. We provide the cash assistance necessary to get that. And all the household expenses are also driven from the cash assistance programs that we administer.
So if someone needed to apply, what is the best way for them to do that?
Best way, we have two offices in Delta County. One is in Hotchkiss. We call it the North Fork Annex. And they would call the main number there, 872-1000, and request an appointment to meet with someone to discuss their needs. In Delta, the number is 874-2030. And the same process exists. You call, describe the type of assistance or difficulty that you're in, and we set up an appointment to do the intake interview. And there are so many programs, it really depends on your personal situation.
You were talking about the hardest part of the job a little bit, working with kids who are in a bad situation, or adults who've put themselves in a bad situation. What is the most rewarding part of this job for both of you?
Well, for me, my perspective as an agency director is I don't see the individual cases as frequently as Debbie does. But I sign off on adoptions and the ability to take a child who has not been cared for, find a foster home, find an adoptive parent, and actually one of my happiest days and happiest activities is signing adoption paperwork and knowing that someone has a chance and a shot at a new life.
Mine is seeing someone come in whose life has really hit a bump. For example, a young mother whose marriage or relationship has fallen apart, and here she is with children and not knowing what to do. We've had people come through in that very situation. We've helped them obtain their education and watch them to take that education and translate that into full-time employment and, you know, completely get themselves where they don't need our assistance. And I just think that's great to be able to help somebody like that, and it's great to give that example to their children.
What surprised you over the years working here?
Resilience. I think the resilience of the human character to overcome adversity. We see some people who you would look at their situation and their story and say, oh, I don't know how I could possibly make it if that happened to me. And to see them, accept and turn around their life situation, make the best out of a bad story, it always impresses me. That oftentimes some of our most heartfelt moments are when someone who is older says, I don't need the assistance anymore, thank you.
Right, and we see some younger people do that too, people who've really hit the skids and come in and say, you know what, I don't need this, give it to somebody else who needs it more.
What advice would you give to someone who suddenly finds themselves in need of assistance from this agency, maybe someone who's had a job their entire life or has had support from family that isn't there suddenly? Do you have any advice?
One of the things that I encounter frequently when somebody encounters problems with the system, oftentimes I take the call. And I'm always surprised when I say, okay, do you have a pencil and a paper? Well, no. And I would say to them, let's get one, and then let's start this conversation by taking some of the information down. I'm going to give you my name, and I'd like to copy yours down, and usually I'm not ready to do that either. And so we make ourselves ready for the meeting, and then we record that information. And before the information sharing is over, I repeat back to them what my expectations are. Did I get it right? And then I ask them to repeat back what their expectations are, and did we get it right? People keeping track of their important information, you'd be amazed how few people know where their birth certificates or their Social Security card or their citizenship papers or their photo IDs. All of this is critical information, and just having it where you can find it and knowing when and where you need to be next is really important information. And yet a lot of people don't know who they spoke with. They just said, I talked to someone there and they told me.
Mm-hmm. So be prepared and organized.
Well, you know, some of the best advice I ever received in my life was advice given to my mother. And it was when she was young and not a single mom, but she was trying to be the mom and dad when my father was away at work. And she asked someone else, how do you do this? And she says, oh, it's quite simple. You run your life or your life runs you. And I think that gave her the charge that, you know, no point in feeling sorry for myself. I'm going to do this. And I think she adopted a life of taking care of the things that she could take care of and making lists and getting rest when, you know, she couldn't do anything else, and then charging back and doing it again. For a lot of us, it's that get back up and try it again. Run your life or it's going to run you.
I would just recommend for somebody who finds himself in need of assistance to either call our offices, as Chuck recommended, or stop by. We have a lot of people, you know, a lot of case managers and eligibility workers who have a lot of knowledge, and we know of a lot of resources out in the community. So I would recommend just call, get information.
And can you give that number one more time, Debbie?
Yes, in the Hotchkiss office, the phone number is 872-1000. And then for our Delta office, it's 874-2030. We do have a website. It's called Colorado Peak. It's where anybody can go online and read about the different programs. It also has a feature that says, am I eligible, where you can go through a series of questions, and it will tell you what programs you may be eligible for.
And that's colorado.gov/peak, P-E-A-K.
Correct.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking with Chuck Lemoine, who's the director of the Delta County Department of Health and Human Services, and Debbie Malgoza, who is the self-sufficiency manager here. Thank you again for taking time to speak with me.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.